Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of TFL Car Talk, and today I have a very special guest. Say hi to Moto Man.
Thank you for having me, sir. It's great to be here in the Colorado Rockies.
Oh, it is so great to have you here, Moto Man. It's been a long time since we've known each other, and for all of you YouTube friends and fans, you'll know Moto Man from Moto Man TV, of course. You've been doing this, well, about as long as we have.
You and I have started about the same time in 2009. I first met you in 2010 at a Chrysler drive.
Yes, that is correct. And we've gone on various programs, and we have lived the dream together. But in this episode, Moto Man, we are going to be talking about how we would fix the legacy brands. I hate using that word, legacy.
Well, they are legacy brands, but what you and I are doing is we are going to become co-emperors.
Okay.
And we are going to take over the entire automotive world. Actually, automotive and technology worlds.
So if we could, like, you know, snap our fingers and institute a myriad of changes at different brands that may be struggling right now, this is how we would do it.
Well, if we could snap our fingers and institute changes, everyone would be driving a Porsche 911. At least according to me.
Yes. Well, that would be a lot of production for a very small company that doesn't have the production capability.
Yeah.
But before we get into it, what are you doing here in Colorado?
So I came up here for a couple of reasons. Yep. One of my board members, you met him, Steve, we did a party, 8 years ago together, a joint party. His daughter got married, so congratulations to the lovely Elizabeth and Brett. Went to a lovely wedding. They did something interesting. They put me at a table between Greeks, and I'm Greek, and car guys.
Okay.
So we had a very interesting discussion at the wedding yesterday. And then I came, and then myself, Andre, and Nathan, we did this great episode of it, which is going to be on TFL Truck. We're calling it Capitalism versus Communism. And we compared the Forerunner TRD Pro in lime green that I'm driving against his Buhanka.
Yeah, so between just me and you, right? Just us here talking.
Just us chickens.
What do you think of the Buhanka?
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I like
it. You don't mind the smell of, you know, gasoline
that permeates the
entire driving experience?
I don't mind the smell of, like, low-ranking KGB officials in there. That's kind of what it smells like. There actually is some sort of odd substance on the picnic table in there, and he thinks he's going to put his wife and kids and share a meal there. But in all seriousness, it does not drive horrible.
No,
it actually has great off-road chops. The steering, believe it or not, the turning radius is pretty good. And the reason why I like it is it's 12 grand all in. As opposed to that kind of thing, anything interesting in the classic car world today, minimum is 20 grand.
Well, you know, he spent,
that's why it's good.
I want to say he spent, what, 3.5 buying it and then the rest getting it here.
It was 8 grand to ship it.
From Sochi.
Absolutely. But you know what? He's got an interesting chair. Every time he goes to a Cars and Coffee, he's going to be the winner.
He's going to be the only one there.
He's going to be the only one there.
And by the way, Buhanka means bread, right?
Loaf of bread.
Yeah, loaf of bread. Yeah. Yeah,
it really like is the U-A-Z or U-A-Z or something like that.
Zavod, I think, means like manufacturer.
I have to enlist your help because we need to twist his arm. He needs to get a chaika, which was high-level party officials had the chaika.
He showed me a picture of it.
It's super sinister looking, so we're going to get it with tinted windows, and every time I come through Denver Airport, he's going to come pick me up.
It looks like, you know what it kind of looks like? Like a Chrysler Imperial.
It was supposed to look like a Chrysler Imperial.
Oh, really?
So you remember the Volga back in the day? I mean, you're part from that
Volga.
Part of the world.
I'm the Czech Republic.
The Volga looked like a 63 Chevy. Yeah. They literally knocked off the designs, kind of like Chinese do today. And then what's the other one? He's got it on his desk, the little one.
Oh, the Lada.
It was a knockoff.
The Lada was a Fiat.
No, not the Lada. The Lada is a Fiat, but there's another one.
The Niva?
The Niva is the Lada. Right. But then there's another one that looks like it's a knockoff of an Austin Minor.
Oh, I know what you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
That's the very low-level KGB officials drove that.
They were black.
Like, they were the ones that came to your door and, like, dragged you out of your house, and the guy in the chike is the one that pointed and you got a bullet in the back of your head. Okay, enough about Russians.
So, let's move on to fixing the auto industry. And let's face it, you know, we are living through some interesting times, as the Chinese proverb goes. I've never seen a moment like this in my whole life.
Never in my life.
Yeah, I know. I know, it's crazy, right? Where, well, a lot of things are happening. First of all, you know, the lots.
Are we sticking just on cars, or are we getting to politics at this point?
No, we don't do politics.
Okay, just want to be clear about
that. We do cars and trucks. But the dealer lots are empty.
Literally empty.
Used car prices are up 40% year over year, so they're through the roof. In some cases, it costs more to buy, like, a used Tacoma than a new Tacoma, which is crazy. And, you know, you've got this whole, I would say, seismic shift where we're going from the internal combustion engine, of course, to the electrified world of cars. And all that is also kind of being done with the way that cars are sold is being dramatically changed. So we're going from kind of the dealership model to a more direct sales model. So there's a lot of different underlying currents. And that's a difficult and interesting time to be living through. And the brands, of course, are addressing that in different ways. And, you know, some are successfully navigating those turbulent waters and some aren't. So we wanted to kind of start out with the ones that are first doing really, really well, right?
Shorter discussion with those.
Right, and then talk about the ones that are kind of struggling. So I think there's no doubt both you and I agree that Hyundai and Kia are just like knocking them out of the ballpark.
Absolutely killing it, and let me share you a couple of reasons why I feel that. Number one, they are probably the best example of consistency. They set a couple of strategic changes back in the 90s where they had this crazy warranty, a 10-year warranty. Then they built on top of that. They needed people to get excited about their cars, so they stole design talent from Western car manufacturers, and they've kept bringing in those folks. Then they've layered on top of that the engineering folks. I just met the guy who runs N, not Biermann, but Till, who's from Mercedes. He was at Mercedes 15 years. And then now what they've done is they've gone after each segment laser-focused. So you look at Genesis as the best example. They have gone after Lexus both in design, quality, and then, of course, the usual value. That's what makes this company successful.
I agree. And, you know, I think a lot of people still think, especially Kia, as a kind of a budget brand, right, where they came in and they undercut the current market of the Japanese. But now they have gone well beyond that, right?
I would argue that... So when you and I first started, if we went to a cocktail party and someone, because you and I are like a doctor at a cocktail party, oh, you know about cars? What do you think about this car? And invariably the conversation was always Honda, Toyota, maybe a Ford. And if you said, hey, you should look at the Hyundai Sonata, 10 years ago people laughed at you. And today everyone takes the Hyundai seriously. I'd say 50% of the people take Kia seriously. Kia hasn't hit that crest that Hyundai's hit yet.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know why that is because, you know, the cars are like virtually identical, right? They're the same chassis underneath.
Well, we're going to get more into this discussion a bit later when we get to Toyota. But I would argue Hyundai, Kia do a very good job of differentiating the cars, not just by the design or pricing. Like, for example, when they came out with the Niro was the crossover and the Ioniq was a Prius. But they're the same car underneath. No one else does that, and they need to start doing it. And that's one of the things that Kia Hyundai is very successful at. Genesis, on the other hand, they've been very focused at staying in specific segments where they're not trying to do too much too fast. And as a result, people are taking them seriously.
Yeah, I always think it's hard to turn around a brand's reputation. It's like trying to turn a super tanker.
Absolutely.
So once that reputation is established...
There's no way to turn it around. It's like going into porn. Once you cross the line, you're never coming back.
All right. Well, we're not doing that.
I am from California.
You are from California, yes. But so I think people, you know, when I talk to people and I suggest... We just bought my mom her first Hyundai.
Really?
Yeah.
Mom's in Florida, right?
She's here, but she's going to Florida in a week. When I suggested that she get a Hyundai, she was like, we got our venue, by the way. She was like, Hyundai? And I'm like, yeah. It's really good. And in her mind, you could just see, like, no, that's the car that...
I'm disappointed in you. Make all this money, you should have bought her a Genesis.
Well, first of all, I don't know if there even is a Genesis dealer near here, so that's one of the problems. And we could talk about, like, them trying to move up market with the more prestigious brand. But she loves the car. And the thing that the two manufacturers always bring to the table is not only do they bring incredible build quality and reliability, but they're always like giving you more for less. So I always feel like, you know, where let's say a competing brand would give you heated seats in the front, Hyundai will give you heated seats in the front.
One of those strategic items that they sorted out, I would argue, about 15 years ago, and they've just built on it. Now they're at a point where they have a reputation, they've got the value, they've got the warranty, but now people are taking them seriously because their neighbors drive these cars. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this on your channel, but mine, I do incredibly good views with Genesis because there's a lot of natural search traffic, which tells me people are taking these cars seriously when they're shopping for the cars. So like G80s, when that car was first changed, what, last year or 2 years ago, and the GV80, it went off the rails.
Yeah, so let's actually talk about some of the cars. And let's talk about the older ones that have kind of milestones for them. And let's talk about the new ones that are just phenomenal. So I think for Kia, the Stinger was a turning point.
Sadly, they want to put a bullet in the head of that thing. Our fellow PR contact, I told him that if they put a bullet in the head of that car, I will hold him personally responsible.
But it was basically like an Audi A6, you know, for Kia.
A7
for Kia.
A7,
prices.
Yeah.
With the same amount of horsepower, I think the same kind of build quality. I drove it from, through most of Colorado, the all-wheel drive. It was incredible.
Have you driven the new one with the new 2.5 in it?
I haven't driven the new one.
I got to tell you, it's now the delta between the 6 and the 4 is so much smaller. Mm. It's almost a push at this point. Like, if you really got to have that edge, yeah, get the 6. But in terms of value, it's hard to beat the 4-cylinder at this point.
Yeah, but that was that vehicle, I think that was like them coming out and kind of showing them that they could build a European performance car.
Well, here's a little tidbit for you. You know, I do a second show where I interview the key people shaping the car world. I was fortunate enough to have Peter Schreier on that show.
Yep.
And
he's head of design.
He's kind of like the vice chairman now. Mm. The head of design now is Tseng Yip.
Okay.
And so he's kind of like the godfather, really. Yep. He still pulls the strings. And Peter, he admitted, when he first got the Kia back in 2007, he said to Chairman Neil Chung that I want to do this car, and it was the Stinger. And the chairman said, I'll make you a deal. Make sure Sportages sell, and we'll do your Kia Stinger.
Okay.
And he, in fairness to the chairman, he followed through.
And by the way, the new Sportage is pretty phenomenal, too, at least.
You know, I got to tell you, they did a nice job with the design.
Yeah.
I don't like the haptic feedback on the inside. I do not. We should probably do a whole other TFL talk about UX design, because now I'm the poster child of when UX design goes wrong.
I know. I agree, dude. I mean, you know, I remember when like Cadillac came out with Q, and I hated it. Everybody hated it. And who would have thunk? Like 7 years later, everybody is going down that route. Like,
and now we look fondly on Cadillac Q when you drive a new GTI.
I know. It was good. But let's switch.
Car company?
Yeah, no. Let's switch gears to a Hyundai product that I think is really kind of, you know, killing it. Obviously, the Telluride Palisade twins. You know,
they're still going $12,000 over sticker in California.
Those are like BMW X7s once again at a much lower price point with the quality.
They'll be around in 10 years.
Yeah, I actually drove an X7, and then right after that, I went on the program for the Telluride, and I would be hard pressed to tell you, like, from just the quality of craftsmanship difference between the two. It's very.
Well, I disagree with you there. I think on the build quality on the inside of an X7. Is definitely better. My concern with an X7 is the car. They gave me an 8-cylinder as a loan. It was probably like right after the car came out, and the valve train already sounded like it was going to die.
Well, I mean, it's one engine choice, right? There's 6-cylinder.
Yeah.
It's kind of becoming ubiquitous, kind of like the Nissan 6.
It's not a huge difference in build quality, but it's enough where you do notice the difference. And at the current pricing, where a fully loaded Telluride, which is what, $48,000-$50,000, $12,000 over sticker, at least in LA, that puts you 10 grand away from an X7.
Yeah. Agreed. And then the car I think that is actually taking the battle to Tesla now is the Ioniq 5.
Oh my God! I'm so excited to drive that. We're driving that what next week? 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, yeah. It's the first. You know, my take always has been that like the ID4 is kind of like Volkswagen takes on a Tesla. The Mustang Mach-E is, you know, Ford's take on a Tesla, but with the Ioniq 5, you've got, you know, they've raised the bar. And it's hard to explain to people who haven't, like, seen it, who haven't been up close with the design of it. And thank you, by the way, when, Motoman did me a huge favor when we had a chance to actually film the first unveiling of it. My flight was delayed. Dude, two airplanes I got on. I've never had that happen. They both had technical issues.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, two.
Wow.
And so I got there, and I got to be able to go into his time slot, so I really wanted to thank you for that. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Happy to help.
But yeah, I was blown away by that vehicle.
That car is a couple of moving parts going on. You know I'm a big design freak. When you see that car in pictures, to me, it screams Jaguaro 1974 Golf. And you're like, oh, it's a car. Mm. But then when you first got up to that thing in person, like, wait a minute. That's a crossover. That's a big vehicle. It's a sizable truck.
It's got the wheelbase of a Range Rover. I mean, it's big.
And then this is where they really just knock it out of the park. All of the packaging on the inside is so unique. No one else is doing that. So, yeah, we've got the ID4. We got the Mach-E. We'll have the Nissan Ariya, which are all direct competitors to the Y. Even the EV6 doesn't have the packaging this car does, and they're the same platform. I think Hyundai is going to be the breakout with this car in that segment.
Yeah, I think so. I think finally, you know, electric cars have been defined by Tesla in America.
Yeah.
Not so much in Europe. In Europe, you know, much broader palette of electric cars. Here, it's Tesla or nothing. And I think this is the one that actually might break through because it is so unique. And it does things that the Tesla doesn't do. For instance, you know, you could plug in that little adapter and plug stuff into it, which is pretty cool. Most electric cars can do that. Why they don't, I don't know why. But that one actually, you know, they thought of that. I'm looking forward to it. You know, from a truck point of view, they've got the Santa Cruz, which is also unique.
I just drove it for the first time. Neat little truck. I know you're truck people. I'm not, but I thought it was a cute little truck.
But once again, you know, they're taking it to Ford.
Yeah.
Ford is outselling them with the Maverick 4-1, but you'd come to expect that, right? Ford's
well, speaking
company.
Of that, should we move on to the other car manufacturers?
Well, I was just going to go
okay.
to Ford.
Yeah, because we spent too much time on the good. What happens when we get to the bad?
Yeah, that was my slick transition.
Yeah. Too much time in the Rocky Mountains.
All right, so let's talk about Ford. I think Ford's a winner. I think Ford has also been knocking them out of the ballpark, whether it's the Maverick, whether it's the Lightning, you know, whether it's the Bronco. These are not to have one huge hit as a car manufacturer is difficult. To have three vehicles that people are lusting after and lining up is unheard of.
So Ford, most of my viewers will know I am not a Ford guy. I've never been a Ford guy. But I respect them from a business perspective, and here's why. They made a difficult decision early on. Chrysler was the first one to say no more cars. I didn't agree with it. I didn't want that way because I'm a car guy. And then Ford did it as well. But they did it in the worst way possible. They just said, we're done. And it was an immediate, like someone walks in, I quit and walk out.
I turn a switch.
It was literally a switch where Chrysler just kind of phased it out. And they didn't tell the story the right way. And some of the folks inside of Ford agreed that was the wrong way to do it. But that paved the way for them to be like an assassin. They walk in and they are laser focused, and as such, we're at a point now where they're hitting their stride in every single segment they are in. And even a guy like me who doesn't like pickup trucks, who doesn't really get excited about cars, like I want to drive that Bronco before I leave. It gets me excited.
Yeah, we'll
the Maverick, I'm not excited about it in terms of for me, but for what it is as a value proposition, they're bringing the fight back to Hyundai and Kia with that vehicle, even though it's a pickup truck. And then you look at some of the other vehicles that they do, they keep on the franchises that they make their money on, F-150s and Mustangs. F-150s, you guys can talk more intelligently to that. But to Mustangs, they continually do the Porsche 911 trick where they're always bringing something new out every year, a new generation, I'm speaking out of turn.
A new trim level,
a new special edition, which keeps it fresh over 7-8 years of its lifetime.
Yeah, they shuffle the chairs on the deck, and they do it in an interesting way. Because everybody can shuffle chairs. It's also how you...
Yeah.
I think they understand their customers, and they understand what their people... And they did something really difficult. They got away from the V8. You know, we have a very big following of people who love the Coyote. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, that was a hard thing to do, to say, you know, we're going to make the... twin turbo V6, the new power plant for our premier vehicle, which of course is the F-150.
Yeah,
that's almost harder than saying we're not going to build any more cars.
So clearly, they were the first ones in the truck world to go to the V6 world, V6s, and most people on the comment section, probably in your videos, didn't agree with it. But now it's kind of proven itself. Has it proven itself in terms of delivering fuel economy? No, it's still. Behaves like an 8-cylinder when you put your foot into it. I would argue the big blind spot there is you lose prestige without a V8, but it's not a problem for them because they're not going after prestige. And in the only area it could have hurt them, which would have been the Ford GT in 2017, they still sold every one of them they could make, and those cars went up in value immediately. So I don't think it's an issue for a Ford. I do think it's an issue for an Audi, a Mercedes, a BMW, or a Genesis.
I agree. And, you know, Ford does have some issues with actually executing, right?
Quality control issues big time, yeah.
Yeah, the Explorer, the latest version of the Explorer, that was a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah.
With the Bronco, same problem, right?
We
bought one with the top that basically they have to replace, which they still haven't replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody else, of course, they're struggling to produce the vehicles.
Well, they're doing
something difficult from their point of view, right? To have a hit and then not be able, because Ford doesn't make money by not selling cars. They're not Ferrari, right?
So here's the one of the reasons why I don't like Fords.
Yeah.
I think Ford always misses the mark on the interior. Their interior design is not great. Their build quality on the interior is not great. They've got the ability to do it. They just choose not to. Like, for example, you get inside of a Lincoln Navigator. I need sunglasses to walk into that thing because it's so bright. The plastic has got all the chrome on it, and the plastic itself is such low quality, it's shiny. And in a vehicle that's $100,000, it's nowhere near what the Escalade is, which made a huge leap forward. And then another thing that they're doing, which I find interesting, is, and granted, this is all very short term, is how they're dealing with a chip shortage, which could be a discussion for another day. But like Mercedes and BMW, they'll ship cars and they might give you a credit for no lumbar support on the right side or no side bolster support in a car that it should come standard. Ford, they're parking the things outside of the factory.
Yeah.
Just not finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
So their execution, something about the operation side is not working. That's the only feedback I'd give to them. Work on operations, work on interior, tactile feel and color and trim, and I think they'd knock it out of the park.
I think a poster child for both their success and the failure, what you need to work on, right, is the Bronco, because, you know, ours is a $63,000 vehicle, right, first edition.
You know, they're asking the dealer next to me, next to Torrance Airport, they're asking $70,000 over sticker for
that
thing.
They're getting $30,000 over sticker, a lot of people on
Broncos.
That's
obscene.
But the interior is not a $63,000.
No,
right?
It's not.
That's where you kind of feel like you're not in the ballpark for what you paid for it.
But think of what the Bronco is. What's the base price for the four-cylinder?
I think they started like 35-ish, something like that.
Okay, so $35,000. If you look at a $35,000 Hyundai, it has a better interior.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I think Ford needs to spend Ford, this is my open letter to you in Dearborn. Please, oh, please, oh, please, fix your interiors. I love Mustangs. I would love to have a Mustang. As a matter of fact, if I had the extra room, I'd buy myself a used GT350. But the interior, still terrible. Actually, my father has a 50th anniversary Mustang. Love driving it, but the interior ain't great.
And it's always been that way. It's not like this is something new, right?
No.
You get a 68 Mustang, get the same issue.
Yeah. Okay, so we've covered Ford. I think we've...
Yep.
Yeah, because I know you guys are Ford guys.
Well, you know, we're Ford guys as much as they let us be Ford guys.
Well, he wrote a check for $63,000. That makes him a Ford guy.
We did get blacklisted by Ford.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's nothing. That's easy to get blacklisted. Me too.
But let's move on. So, of course, you know... Other side of the street, GM. What do you think
GM? Okay, so this is, again, I've got to share the bias.
Can I make one observation before
Yes, sir.
I thought this was interesting. You know, we were just at the LA Auto Show.
You were, I wasn't.
I was at the LA Auto Show, walked the thing. I have to say I'm very proud of myself. Motoman, I'm going to watch 25,000 steps in one day.
Impressive, sir.
Yeah, that's like half a marathon, I believe.
So what they don't know, you guys don't know, is our background, we're both distance runners.
Yes, we both run. So I went into the GM booth, and this is a company that has said the future is electrified, and a lot of analysts say that they're kind of one of the leaders in electrification. Mm-hmm. Not one electric car, not one hybrid, not one plug-in hybrid, nothing with a battery in the entire booth. And I think that you know, sometimes it's not what they say, but what they do. And that was very surprising. No Hummer EV, no Bolt, no...
I think that's a bigger theme for what's going on in our world overall. What the news tells us and what the reality is, and that probably is a very good example of it.
Yeah. So, what do you think? What's GM doing right? And
so,
where can they improve?
Once again, I got to give the bias here. So, like Ford, I'm not a Ford guy. GM, I am a GM guy. I grew up on GM cars. So, big fan of specifically the powerful Cadillacs, the new Corvette, that kind of stuff. At some point, I'll have myself an early C3. Long and short of the story, I think for the most part they are firing on all cylinders. I think they're successful in areas that Ford is not. Ford has done a great job executing their first electric car, better than most others' freshman efforts. But General Motors has been at it in terms of mass market electric cars for 11 years now, and they're putting investments into things that other companies aren't. Like, for example, how to package batteries. You know, yeah, we could all put batteries low in the car, and that helps with the center of gravity and helps with the handling, all that kind of stuff, driving dynamics. But what they're doing is trying to figure out how to make more dense batteries. And then by having more dense batteries, which effectively would make a smaller footprint of between the wheelbase, you have more space to package other things. And what they're doing is they're building vehicles around that. And the first example we're going to see is the Cadillac Lyriq, which, do I love the design? No. But I'm excited to see all of this finally come together in that, as well as the Hummer EV.
Yeah, I think the Hummer EV, and I talked to Al Oppenheiser. The chief engineer, and he said something interesting. He said that, you know, this is something very rare in the car world, that GM went to him and said, you know, build the best off-road truck you can, or off-roader, and money be damned. Like, they said, they wrote him a blank check, and they said, basically, just build the best electric, not even electric, just build the best off-roader you can.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the whole theme is like moonshot, right? You know, the first edition trucks are white, kind of like NASA cars.
Yeah.
There's like little boot prints from the moon. And, you know, they have the map, the topographical map of the moon in the floor.
I would argue that the GMC Hummer EV, the Stingray, and now the coming Z06, as well as the Escalade, people kind of discount this, Escalade, all of them are moonshots. And this is kind of the soap opera that is General Motors. Back in the 50s and 60s, they were oozing excellence. They couldn't miss. Their designs were amazing. Their engineering was on top of the world. And then they came into the Maylays era. We can have a whole different discussion about that. But when they want to, they have the resources and they have the talent to say, we want the best. And the current Corvette, the Escalade, and that EV, which you have driven, is examples of that. Where I would caution them is, can we spread that to other parts of the group? Like, for example, you look at some of the crossovers, the Trailblazer. I have nothing good to say about that vehicle. So the Trailblazer, it's a completely unforgettable vehicle that, frankly, is overpriced. Then you look at the Blazer. That's an example of, you put the wrong name. A beautiful vehicle. The design is great, but you have poor execution on the interior and the wrong name on the vehicle. So if we could take some of that excellence that we see in those three products and apply it into engineering excellence, and again, like we've told Ford, better color and trim and tactile feel, specifically in the pickup trucks. I know you guys are huge on pickups. The inside of a Silverado, the inside of a GMC pickup truck, not a good place to be.
And they're addressing that. They have stepped up. I think Ram specifically has certainly set the bar for interior
Ram
design.
Ram definitely
trucks.
Has.
And so now GM, with the latest, the 2022 Silverado, has addressed that, and I think they understand that. I would also say, I think initially you said that, you know, they're firing on all cylinders. People would argue that the Bolt was a bit of a debacle, right? It would catch fire. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was actually their fault. I think that was in the production of the batteries.
I would agree.
It was LG, and it wasn't GM. So if you're wondering about that.
Which goes back to one of the reasons why they want to control some of the battery production.
Yeah, but I would have to say that, you know, I have to agree. Like, when they want to, they build some of the world's best vehicles, and I think especially the new C8 Corvette.
Absolutely. Complete moonshot. That's what I called my episode.
It's funny from like a European standpoint. They give us so much crap that we can't build a world, you know, class car. And yet, yeah, when we do build a world class car, and I'm talking we as in America, yeah, they don't give any credit. I remember the C7, I was in Europe once at the Geneva Auto Show, and GM was there, and like they were getting no respect whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think with the C8, they finally have established themselves not only as a company that can build incredible and lustworthy vehicles, mm-hmm, but a company that can build vehicles that perform and that, yeah, have the interiors that go along with that standard. GM's
They're
weird.
One of the few that have the resources and the talent to be able to execute. It's unfortunate they don't do it consistently. That's my only feedback to
it's
these
like
guys.
It's like they pick favorites.
Yeah. You know? I think if I could go so far, maybe it's a management issue. Maybe they need to change management to get more consistency. Like, you look at Hyundai, they are lethal. They're dangerous because they're consistent.
And I've talked to some people in GM, and they're also kind of head scratchers because, like, let me give you an example. GM has not done a good job in learning from their past, right? So,
give me an example of that.
A good example of that is Hummer, right? For a while there, when the Hummer brand came out, they had some of the best off-road engineering in the world, mm-hmm, because that was a really good off-roader. Mm-hmm. Forget the fact that it was used, you know, by pop stars and rap stars as a Hollywood Boulevard car, but as an off-roader, it was really good. And then when they basically shut down the brand, they also disbanded that entire team. Mm-hmm. And so when they went and built the new, they had to actually rebuild their off-road engineering team.
They did.
Same thing that happened with the NUMMI plant, right? They worked with Toyota, but yep, none of those like lessons,
yeah,
actually got to GM, right? I mean, the reason they partnered with Toyota was so they could, like, you know, do better, more reliable, less prone to failure vehicles, and none of
they
those
have a long history
over
of that. Like, they, yeah, did that it's recently weird with a CT6 Blackwing. They finally got that car was a technological tour de force from an engineering perspective. Then they finally gave it the right engine, and they only made 400.
I know that it's 400. Like, it's a head scratcher.
Yeah. Buy it. It's going to be a classic.
It's a head
scratcher. It's going to be a classic.
It's good. Actually, any of the last generation internal combustion engine Cadillacs right now, especially the two sports cars,
yeah,
you know, those are going to be classics. Get them while you can.
Yeah. The we sold a CTS V-Wagon manual Black Knight edition. We made a couple of bucks on it.
Yeah, well, you know, every journalist loved that, and the car was a flop in the marketplace. And now, you know, if you had one, you can print money.
You know what? No, I disagree with you. I'll tell you why it wasn't a flop in the market. The wagon wasn't a flop because it wasn't marketed the right way. Mercedes, Audi, and Porsche can't build enough of these $200,000 station wagons. Do you realize an RS6 right now, $50,000 over sticker if you're lucky?
I know.
So Cadillac, I just don't think they marketed it the right way.
Or they were ahead of I don't know. I mean, there's a lot.
And Americans, they were half price.
Yeah, Americans don't like wagons. That's also an issue. Europeans love their
disagree.
Wagons.
I disagree completely. I think if they brought the right one back today and marketed the right way, they would be toe-to-toe with an RS6 and E63S.
And I think also, like, you have to catch it at the right time. So I think Porsche is hitting that upswing, and I think people are getting tired of crossovers, and I think with like the Gran Turismo, they're now coming back to wagons. Because
Cross Turismo.
Yeah, the Cross
Magnificent
Turismo.
Magnificent car.
Yeah, beautiful car, yeah. The Taycan Cross Turismo. They're just, you know, at the right point. RS6 as well.
Yeah.
I think that's starting to come back, but it's funny because, like, we kill them when they're just starting to be on the upswing, right? It's like here's the worst timing in the automotive world. I'll give you two examples, okay? And they're both, mm-hmm, Japanese. Nissan killed the Xterra at the exactly wrong time, mm-hmm, and Toyota, we'll get to that, killed the FJ at exactly the wrong time.
Yeah,
just when it was just starting to take off.
I could give you 10 other examples, but I agree with you on those.
All right.
Shall we move on to...
Volkswagen Group, man.
Volkswagen Group.
Oh, we got a lot of different
Santa
brands
Maria
there.
Santa Maria, Madre de Dios, folks. Okay, so here's an example of a company that they are firing mostly on all cylinders. They're doing some great stuff. They've been smart. It's kind of like, I just saw the Rolling Stones recently in concert. Amazing band. Like, these guys, 78, 76, 74, 2.5 hours. They were incredible. Mick Jagger was out there dancing for like a half an hour on two or three songs. It was amazing.
You know, Mick Jagger's dad was a gym teacher.
I can see why. The man's completely fit.
Yeah, the dude
he could probably run longer than I can right now.
Like, apparently his dad was like into fitness long before it became a thing. And I think Jagger picked that up.
Yeah. So the reason why I bring up this example, Mick made this great joke about the Beatles on stage. It was super funny. And Rolling Stones, they've had their fits and starts. They've gotten angry at each other, but they never broke up. And that's why here they are. I saw them, was it 60 years, 50 years to the day they met on a tube stop platform. I saw them 60 years to the day that Mick and Keith Richards met. The Beatles, what were they together, 10 years? That was it. And Volkswagen is the Rolling Stones. They brought together a good group of brands, and they've got them from stem to stern, you know, top to bottom, and they keep them together and manage them well, but separate them out. Meaning, I look at a Q5 and I look at a Macan, same vehicle, but they look and feel very different in the way they drive. That's what I think they're doing the best at. What they're doing the worst at, and I think we agree on this, UX design in that new ID series, which has now spilled over into one of the best vehicles on the planet, the Mark 8 Golf GTI, the worst UX I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's...
Worse than Cadillac Q.
I was super excited to go drive both the new GTI and the Golf R, and both of those... I would actually get the GLI over both of those just because it's got the old, infotainment.
I wouldn't get either because the GTI, it's so good. They did such a good job dynamically with that car, but that UX is just a train wreck.
So I would argue the biggest, look, in my mind, Volkswagen should be the most popular non-domestic brand in America. They were here first, right?
They were Pennsylvania.
And they had a huge hit with the Beetle, and then I think their biggest issue is that they don't listen to local talent or the people that run the company here, right? Everything is run, because it's German, out of Wolfsburg. Mm-hmm. And so they should have brought the Amarok in a long time ago. It would have been their best-selling car. They should have brought the California, right? The little van that they do. And instead, what I think they do as Volkswagen is they give us the detuned version of the much better vehicles. Mm-hmm. Passat is a prime example of that. And I think that's what's holding them back to something like 400,000 units a year, which isn't a lot.
But this is the dichotomy between Hyundai, Kia, and Volkswagen. Hyundai, Kia does exactly what you just said, where at least Volkswagen in the Volkswagen brand doesn't. But Porsche does. Porsche, the entire reason why you can get a manual transmission in a 911 today is because of the U.S. market. And it's like a 25% take rate in those cars. So I don't understand where the disconnect is, why Volkswagen can't listen to the colonies, but Porsche, and I would argue to some extent, Bentley and Lamborghini listen to the colonies.
Which is within the group, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I mean, they've gone through a lot of CEOs in the 10 years we've been doing it. I think there have been, three? And part of it has to do with Dieselgate, of course. But
there's not
a lot of consistency in leadership here in America.
It's, at the end of the day, it's kind of like BMW in that there's still very much family fingerprints on it.
And I mean CEOs in America.
I thought you meant Winterkorn.
I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about here in America.
It's unfortunate because they don't have the autonomy that they should. Like, Mercedes has more autonomy here. Switching gears a little bit on you, Audi. I'm not a huge Audi guy, but I love the RS6. I love some of the products they have. And one of the big things I say about Audi, they're kind of like a Porsche. A Porsche with the engine in the wrong place. They know it's in the wrong place. They've made it work now for 60 years. And it's just, that's a feature, not a bug, and it's the way the car drives. Audi's the same way by having the engine all the way in the front. That, they do well. What they don't do well is, I think bean counters are the product planners, and they're segmenting making the pie too small. They're slicing it too small. I think they don't need every version of SUV. They don't need every version of sedan.
Yeah, and the Germans have been doing that now for the last, 5 years, where there's not a market segment where they won't compete, no matter how silly or small.
And to kind of jump ahead a little bit, I think BMW is doing the same thing. They're pulling back from it a little bit, but within the Volkswagen group, Audi's the only one that is slicing the pie too thin. I think Porsche is about perfect in execution in pretty much everything they do.
So Audi really lost their mojo to Tesla. I think out of all the brands, Tesla hurt Audi the most. Audi was kind of the cool kid on the block. They were the ones that had the, it's hard to bottle cool, but they had it with their exterior and interior design, right? A little bit of minimalist. It was just kind of Bauhausy in some ways. And then Tesla just took the rug out from underneath them. I think they were hurt, like I say, by far by the ascent of Tesla.
I would go a bit step further. I'd say Tesla had sex with a UCLA cheerleader on their doorstep. That's probably more like it.
California reference. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you another California reference. I don't think this is a secret anymore, but when Franz went over to Tesla from Mazda, he flat out said to Elon, our car needs to look like this. And Elon's like, no, it could be anything we want. No, people want an Audi A or S7.
Yeah.
We have to give them what they want, and then we could change the paradigm of what they need. And that's why the Tesla looks the way it does. And I would argue Derek, who went to Lucid from Mazda, did the same thing with Lucid. We'd get that in another episode.
Yeah, no doubt. There's this thing happening right now with German brands, and I think Audi is the poster child for this, where and I think it hurts them. Like an A3 is a smaller version of an A4, which is a smaller version of an A6, which is a smaller version of an A8, and there's not enough differentiation. Toyota does the exact opposite, right?
I would disagree with you on that.
So what Toyota does is, like, they'll throw switches and gears. Their cars are all over the place.
They are.
With Audi, I mean, the interior, the exterior design, they are almost identical to each other.
Like,
you could park an A4 next to an A3, next to an A6, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll have a hard time telling them apart.
Okay, so let's dive into that a bit more.
Yeah.
I agree with you on a design. It's the Russian nesting dolls
thing,
which BMW does to some extent. They're kind of getting away from it. But in terms of execution, kind of, we've been hitting this a lot, this theme, execution of build quality, of driving dynamics, of engineering, an A3 is not at all related to an A6 or an A8. An A3, it's kind of like the beam counters went into the engineers and said, we need you to make a car to this price point. Where in the A6 and the A8, and I would argue the RSQ8 as well, they said, we need engineering excellence. And again, if I were to caution them, you don't want to make a pizza too cheap that no one wants to eat it. And an A3 is that vehicle. No one wants to eat it. The only reason they sell them is because they put them on lease specials. The Q3 sells a little bit better because it's a crossover. But at the end of the day, I don't think Audi and Mercedes and BMW should even be competing in that segment. They should pull up stakes, take those resources, and apply them to unusually good either crossovers, which people want, or unusually good sedans.
Yeah, the other interesting thing, Motorman, I think with Audi, and most people I think don't realize this, is they're probably furthest down the electrification road besides Tesla.
Audi?
Yeah. They're going to, by the end of this year, they're going to have three models that are completely electric.
Well, they're kind of like...
And the variations on those models.
They're kind of like the modern day Oldsmobile. Back in the day, General Motors used Oldsmobile for all their testing of new technology. Audi has become that. And that's another thing that I think Volkswagen, just kind of going back up to the group, that Volkswagen Group is doing well. They, once they brought all these disparate brands together, what they've done is they've parsed out specialities. So, for example, V8 engines is done within Porsche. The platform for large rear-wheel drive vehicles is done within Porsche. Powerful V6s is done within Audi. Volkswagen does the four cylinders. And what they do is they share the technology, or they share the engineering resources across the whole board. But what they realize is Porsche has certain specialities, Audi has certain expertises, and they separate it out, and they do it probably the best out of all the big groups.
Oh, yeah, I agree. So let's move on.
Okay.
Next brand, and we were talking about this earlier. There's this thing between like BMW, Mercedes, and Audi, where one brand is like the hot brand, and then like one brand's kind of just kind of going along, and one brand is kind of lost in the woods. And, and the German brand right now that's on the ascent, of course, I think is Mercedes. I think they're just kind of the it brand of the three German luxury brands right now. And that's because I think they're also, hitting on a lot of the themes that makes German vehicles desirable. So they've got the electrification going with, their luxury vehicles. They've got the sport brand going with the GTs and the Black Series, right? The Black Series are selling, what, 300K over sticker right now?
Yep.
They've got the G-Wagon, which is selling like 150 over sticker. So
going, the G63 is going for 300 grand. S580s are going for 50 over sticker.
Right. And actually, in their crossovers and SUV, I think, the unheralded one that I like the most is the GLB. I think the B is just hits kind of the right mark.
So that's a good example of good execution in the cheaper segment.
I agree.
That actually works really well. It's dynamically, it's not the best thing out there, especially the GLB 35 is the best version of it. I actually like that one a lot.
It's one of those cars that's kind of bigger than it is on the inside than on the outside.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Mercedes has struggled with some of their less expensive models, right? Well, you feel like the engineering talent has gone to the S-Class or has gone to, you know, the GT and then some of the cheaper
but
ones.
But that goes back to this is feedback to all of these guys, whether it's Volkswagen Group, BMW, or Mercedes. You don't want to compete on price. Hyundai and Kia are going to eat your lunch at some point at that point. Toyota is doing a great job with driving dynamics and design at this point. You don't want to be making cars, selling them below, say, $40,000. I think that's just advice to every one of these luxury manufacturers. The race to the bottom always is fraught with peril. The other thing about Mercedes, which I think is interesting, I agree with you. They are on fire right now. I think we'll talk a little bit about the EQS, but before they got to that, they've actually made some bad investments in alternative propulsion systems and lost. So they're coming from a position of being behind in terms of resources. So they're here finally at the table, kind of later than they wanted to be. But overall, the execution is actually really good. Like, you drove the EQS. I drove the EQS.
I didn't drive it. Tommy drove it.
EQS, it's not a Tesla, and it's not a Taycan, and it's not trying to be. It's the first ever luxury electric vehicle, and they do a good job of it. Yeah, I piss and moan about the UX design. They don't have any knobs or real toggle switches or controls, which is a safety problem. What's that?
They do have a hyperscreen.
The design is great, but what it needs is knobs for the HVAC, a knob for the volume, and toggle switches for the drive system. That's it. That's all they got to change, because right now it's unsafe.
I think can you get it without the hyperscreen? Can you get it like the S-Class?
Only the 450.
Only the 450.
EQS 450 is like the S-Class, but I would argue that the design that's in the S-Class, it doesn't look good.
I just had the S-Class. I must be getting old because I didn't.
You are old.
Zach had to pry the keys away from my hands. I did not want to give that vehicle up. It was just so much fun to drive around.
So the title of my S-Class episode was The Reincarnation of Elegance.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
Even though the design of the dashboard, not elegant. It's too... So Tesla can get away with these stupid screens because that's what all the kids want nowadays. But a Mercedes, it appeals to a different buyer. And I did an unusual, straw poll kind of test, man-on-the-street test. You know the guys at my airport with all the warbirds?
Yeah.
They're older.
Yeah.
They drive fancy cars.
Do they like the S-Class?
I let them drive it, and I didn't tell them anything how to operate the screen. And they've driven other cars of mine as well. They came back and they said, I don't know how to operate this thing. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. They didn't like it. And that is their audience. So again, my biggest piece of advice back to Mercedes is, I get where you're going with the designs. The hyperscreen is beautiful. Stick with it. But you need to have tactile feel integration in the way people interact with the vehicle. Everything via haptic feedback or touchscreen, where your finger goes is where your eyes go, and that is unsafe.
Yeah, the thing that was most disappointing, and I love the vehicle, don't get me wrong.
And for the avoidance of doubt, the car that hit me was a Tesla.
The thing that was most disappointing was Mercedes had the most intuitive and easiest to use seat controls, right? Because it had a little seat.
Oh, the best.
And now they've gone kind of haptic. And
I don't like that.
I know, and I was like, how do I just want to move?
Screwed up. You can't even open the sunroof. The sunroof is this haptic feedback touch sensitive thing.
And then if you want, of course, Mercedes is this thing where the side bolsters will move.
Yeah.
So some people like it. I find it annoying as hell.
Yeah.
And then to turn that off, you have to go three screens into it. So you have to know where that is.
You have to know where it is.
The one thing
I will say that is very cool,
the
one thing, please, let's have real knobs, toggle switches, and this is to everybody, but definitely
but
Mercedes.
We're going the wrong way on that.
So the
you
one
know why it's cheaper. It's cheaper to get rid of knobs.
I know it's cheaper.
That's why. It's cheaper.
But it's not safe.
And it's stupid.
It's not safe.
And it's unintuitive.
It's unintuitive, and you'll have more people running into each other or more people getting run over like I did.
So
I don't want to spend another month in the hospital.
Moto Man got hit by a Tesla, if I recall.
And I do, when I do things, I do them big. It was an X, thank you very much.
A big Tesla.
But the point I was getting to was the one thing that is cool about what they're doing, when you adjust the mirrors on the EQS, there's no toggle switch between the two. It's just the five-way controller. You look at the mirror, and the sensor in the dashboard sees where your eyes are, and it changes that mirror. That, more of that. How about more of that?
Yeah, but there's always a downside to that, right? When a car thinks for you, like the new Tesla, right, where supposedly it knows what gear, so we're getting rid of the gear. You know, there's always moments when it does the wrong thing.
Well, you want redundant systems. I mean, as a pilot, my plane has two electrical systems for a reason. I want redundancy and built into the system. That's what I want.
All right, well, we have very little time and three more brands
to go. Okay, let's go to it.
So before we...
This is the lightning round?
Yeah, before we jump into the last two, back to Germans, let's jump to Toyota, because we did mention Toyota. Yeah.
I think for the most part, Toyota is killing it. But then again, they always kill it because they're the example of consistency. They're also the example of why you don't want to ever be in debt and why you want to have a lot of money in the bank because you can do anything you want. You have a lot of options. They also did a couple of things very right. For the past 24 years now, they have practically invented the hybrid space. And by design, people think, Toyota's late to the party with electric. No, they're not. By design, they built a franchise of hybrids, and now they make a lot of money on that franchise. They wanted to see where the market was going in electric and make sure they made the right bet in electric. And I would argue they've done a good job with it.
So
the problem with this car is they're selling it as a Subaru as well, and it looks exactly the same. They missed an opportunity to make the Subaru look like a Subaru and this look like a Toyota.
So I think there's a couple big clouds on the horizon. First of all, I can tell you from firsthand experience and from kind of being in the business that electric car people that dyed in the wool like Tesla hate Toyota. Hate it, because they think that they're holding technology back. They think that they're holding environmentalism back, right?
Yeah.
Because they're not on the forefront of electrification. I can tell you that the new BZ would have been a great car 5 years ago.
But I would agree.
In terms of like its charging rate, in terms of all the things that you use as a metric for electric cars, it's too little too late. And I agree, to build it with Subaru was just silly. Toyota's the biggest car company in the world. And with what I would argue is the biggest trend right now in the automotive world to actually not produce your own car and do this kind of small half. I think even the Nissan is better in a lot of ways.
So
and the Nissan's even behind the latest technology. And this Toyota, look, Toyota never, very unless it's Synergy Drive, right? They're very rarely.
But Nissan's been doing it for 11 years on a mass market scale. So they actually have more expertise in EV than Toyota does, even though resources are less. Where Toyota has done, let's go back to the BZ4. I agree with you. It is too little too late at this point, but I think what they're going to do is go after a price point with that vehicle.
That's all they're going to have. That's the only selling point that they can hang their hook on, because it certainly won't be range or charging.
Hold on a minute. They've already committed to at least 7 electric vehicles in the U.S. from a cast of 70 vehicles worldwide. And I would argue their next couple of steps are going to be more on the Lexus side of things, where you're going to have something that's more toe-to-toe with a Tesla. But here's the thing. I don't think, just like you say, the person who has a Tesla doesn't think of a Toyota. The big problem was you move into EVs, and this is going to be a different discussion we're going to have, it's not about reliability, at least now with EVs. It's not even about the brand anymore. When people buy a Toyota because they're reliable and it will not die, you'll get sick of it, give it to your kids and tear another one off the roll. Rather, what's happening is people want to try, they're more excited to try a new brand because they want to be more bleeding edge. But does that translate to volume right now? No, not in the short term. I think what's going to happen now is you're going to start seeing more people or more volume in the Taycan segment than you are in the segment we're going to see competing with Wise.
Well, we shall see, but Toyota certainly has made a look. When you hear car companies saying we're going to electrify by pick the year, I don't believe it. It's been used so much. I remember when Sergio said it 5 years ago. We were not even talking about FCA at that point or Stellantis.
It's like the old hydrogen thing,
right? Right. They all commit to being carbon neutral, and then when it rolls around, they're so far behind the ball. So I'll believe it when I see it. But let's keep going. And then I have one question. I have an interesting question I want to ask you,
yes, sir,
which will lead up to the next episode. But let's talk about BMW.
BMW. Okay, this is one that's a little lost.
Yes,
in the but they've had some bright spots recently. Okay, so I used to work for BMW. To full disclosure, I did an internship at built BMWs when I was in university. I love the way the car drives. However, over the past, starting with two generations ago, 3 Series, they started phoning in designs was 20 years ago, but they phoned in their driving dynamics. And at that point, I argued back then the G70 was a better BMW 3 Series. But then starting with this generation of 3 Series, they're starting to take themselves seriously again. They're starting to get back to driving dynamics, and they're starting to leapfrog the competition, at least the way they drive. Like, for example, a BMW M3, as well as the BMW M4, the current generation car, is not just a BMW M3 M4, it's closer to a Porsche in driving dynamics. Then they followed it up with the M240i. I just drove that. You did too. You drove it in Palm Springs. That car, the title of my episode is The Reincarnation of the Ultimate Driving Machine. It reminds me of an E36 3 Series. It has that type of experience. Where I think they're losing their way is, it, like the Audi, it's too much slicing the pie too thin.
Okay, they went, I counted once, they have like
too many flavors, like they got a 4 Series GT, they got all this stuff.
I counted like 28 models now, it's too much.
I'd rather see them take those resources and putting them into some more special cars. Something that makes them stand out a bit more.
That's
and then
idea.
Continue with the, I don't like an X7, but it, the execution of it is actually pretty good.
So, you know, there's this question in my mind, like, at what point do you weigh comfort and luxury over sportiness? And you were on the program where we just drove the full line, right? And we drove a lot of the M cars.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like they went too far on the sportiness side. You know, just carbon fiber seats that aren't comfortable, especially like that one with the little weird thing in between your legs, right?
Well, that's optional on M3s and M4s. It's fitted as standard to the M5 CS, which is magnificent. Best car they make right now.
Yeah, it's a great car, and it's a car that, once again, is a halo car for them.
Yeah, 50 grand over sticker.
But it's not the car that most people are buying.
No.
And I'm just wondering if they've gone too far kind of down the motorsport rabbit hole.
No, I would disagree with you.
I think they've
gone too far down the Lexus rabbit hole.
You think?
I think they've become Lexus. If you look at the cars that they sell in volume, the 5 Series, the X5, the X3.
X3, X5, X7.
That stuff, I think they've taken away some of the soul of their vehicle.
Hmm.
And that's why they're not standing out as much. I take my hat off to them for the consistency of the interior design, and they're at a point now where their UX, we used to laugh at many years ago, is now one of the best in the industry. That's great, but you've gone away from what made BMW BMW, and I would argue that's where Mercedes-Benz is kind of eating their lunch, because Mercedes-Benz has adopted the sportiness in some of their cars.
I agree. Yeah, they certainly have, and have gone directly after BMW. I just kind of think BMW made really good sporty cars, and now they make really good like race cars, and I wonder what the demand.
Well, there's nothing in between. There's the M5 CS, and there's the 530i, and the 530i to me is a rear wheel drive ES300. It doesn't stand out enough. It's not like a 535 from back in the day. A 550 is a different story, but that's an expensive car.
All right, last company before I ask you this question, Honda.
Honda, this is another one's a little lost, I think.
Yeah, Honda's really lost.
You know, lost.
Honda has an issue with design right now.
Well, they've had an issue with design for a very long time.
They seem to oscillate between like over-designed and under-designed. And right now, like the Integra to me seems under-designed, and so does the latest Civic. I think
is like the 2012 Civic,
yeah,
where they went in the wrong direction.
I
know you thought it was over-designed the last generation. I actually like the design of the last generation.
It was a little too busy. Right?
Yeah.
We're at a point right now where there's all these intersecting lines and pentagons, and it's just gotten really crazy.
Yeah. I take my hat off to Honda for staying focused on sedans. I don't know how much longer they're going to continue to do that. I think they are an engineering company first. And sadly, design has lost its way over the past like 10 years. I do think, I'm not an Acura guy, but I do think Acura is starting to get some swagger back, not with the Integra. I think the Integra,
which
I don't understand why they came out with it. I really don't.
It's a shame because that name is, you know, it has a lot of value.
And that's why they brought it out.
Yeah,
they figured, okay, you know what? We're selling 250,000 Civics a year. Why don't we just change the badge and put a name on it, and we'll actually get another 100,000 sales? And maybe they will, but for that money, there are better cars out there.
The other thing that Honda doesn't do, which is really hot right now, are off-roaders, which is weird because they have an entire motorsport division that does nothing but some of the best off-roaders. Whether
could
side
they be
by
competitive?
Side. Yeah, they made the Ridgeline more off-roady in this last incarnation, and it's selling.
But
it's working.
Do you like Nissan is all but done in the full-size space? Could these guys come in and do that?
It's weird.
You know more than I do.
It's the only Japanese company that doesn't do good off-roaders, right?
You know what we forgot to say? The Tundra was amazing. The new Tundra is an amazing vehicle.
Toyota does incredible off-roaders, Land Cruiser, Tundra, 4Runner, Mitsubishi does incredible off-roaders, not here in America, but in the rest of the world, right? What's the third Japanese company? Oh, Mazda doesn't do off-roaders either. So Mazda and Honda don't do off-roaders. And that's a tough thing not to be doing when the whole world has gone off-road crazy.
So here's my take on it. And this is just me thinking off the cuff because you are more of an off-road guy. I am not. Mazda has to stay laser-focused on the segments they're successful in because they have to make money on every single car. They have to gross on every single car. Toyota can afford to make $100 on every Camry.
Yeah, Mazda's...
Honda can't. They're just like Mazda. They're a little bit bigger, but just like Mazda, that they have to make money on each car.
Mazda's in that weird space where they're not big enough to be able to do volume, but yet not small enough to be able to do, unique, prestigious, expensive vehicles.
Well, they're going
really
to try that.
They're
going to try that with that straight six.
Yeah, it's a hard place to be.
Yeah.
It's a hard place to be. All right, so I was listening to Inside EVs, and Kyle, who is also here in Colorado, actually made a good point, and I wanted to run this by you because he said people should stop ordering cars because it's stupid. And he said the way you should, if you want a hot car, like a Bronco or a Rivian or, Tesla, actually, if you want a hot car that's using the traditional dealership network is, let's say you want a car like a G-Wagon, right, that you can't get. Mm-hmm. You call the dealer up and you say, hey, if you've got somebody who cancels the order, I'm ready to buy it. Mm-hmm. You don't go out and order it ahead of time. Same thing with the Bronco. You want a Bronco, you call the Ford dealer and say, when somebody cancels, and they will, then I'll be there and I'll step in. And then I started thinking about the fact that what's creating a lot of, unsustainable momentum right now for car manufacturers is it started with, I think, Tesla, especially with the Cybertruck when they got like 250,000 reservations for it. And then it also blew up with Rivian where they got like 50,000 for the Rivian. And so what's happening is people are putting down reservations on cars. Andre has five, by the way. He's got five.
I didn't know he made that much money.
But that's the point. They're not going to buy all five, right? He's got one for a canoe. He's got one for a Lightning. He's got one. I don't know what else he's got.
Yeah.
Right? But so, and then what happens is like Rivian takes those reservations to Wall Street, and Wall Street turns that into a company that's valued at, a higher market cap than Ford, which is batshit crazy.
Okay, so that's a bigger discussion, and just kind of encapsulating it a bit. I was in tech for 15 years before I got into this world. And sadly, that's been going on for probably 30 years in the tech world where they overinflate numbers and they're selling blue sky.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's only gotten worse now in this ridiculous economy we're in where there is, Warren Buffett, he likes to say, we look for companies with a durable competitive advantage.
What does that mean?
That means a company that actually sells products,
right.
Hard products like Coca-Cola, See's Candies, Geico Insurance. Those have a durable competitive advantage. But everybody else is selling air at this point. And the numbers are so overinflated. It's like, I teach an investment class, I teach a financial class in my church, but I don't want to get too far down this road. But what's happening is when you look at a valuation of any company, figure 10, maybe 15, 20 times multiple is good to go with, because then you can understand you've got some relation to the actual business. We're at multiples that are unheard of even in the tech boom. And what's happening with the Rivians of the world,
Rivians
what did they go out? They were 150 in their IPO?
They built
like
200 hand-built trucks, and their valuation is greater than most of the existing car. They have one factory that's barely running, and their valuation is higher than Honda that builds tens of millions of
but
cars.
But here's the problem with that. No one on Wall Street is willing to cut their numbers. You say you've got 50,000 reservations. I call bullshit. So I don't know if I should have said that. I call bull crap.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cut your numbers. You have 10,000 reservations. That's what should happen. But sadly, the way Wall Street works isn't that
right,
way because they're selling you something.
Wall
they're
Street,
selling you blue sky.
Wall Street used to, I think, I don't know. I don't dabble in that. We have a strict policy of not investing anything because, how can we review stuff that we don't?
Yeah.
So we don't invest in any car companies. But it seems like Wall Street has now just become pure like greed and gambling. So,
it is gambling.
So it's if you can short it, you short it, or not the other way.
I'll go a step further. It's not even just. I'm a big believer in very few people should be taking positions in individual equities.
Yeah.
However, a big believer in investing in mutual funds. But the mutual funds that I've been in for 25, 30 years, I wouldn't buy them again now because the multiples, we're not talking 52-week highs, we're talking 10-year highs.
Oh.
There is no relation to reality. Granted, we're getting off cars at this point and getting into politics and finance, but that is impacting the Rivians of the world and ultimately what Canoe will do. Lucid, they went down the route. They didn't do the traditional route that other companies did. They did the SPAC route, which is even more disingenuous.
Yeah, and especially the SPAC route with Nikola, right? That company...
That blew up in their face.
Yeah, that blew... I mean, you know, and what we're seeing are people taking advantage of that to make themselves mm-hmm. very rich. I mean, it's like the Wild West right now.
And the concern I have...
It feels like there's no adults present to say,
no.
This is going to end badly.
It's a combination, I mean, again, I don't want to get into politics on this, but it's a combination of the oversight, not just in the U.S., it's also in Western Europe, the way Wall Street and the way the city works. But the big thing I'm concerned about is I don't want this kind of crap to overshadow what will be a great vehicle, which will be the Rivian. Like, do you remember Mark Echo?
Yeah.
The guy that had that hip hop brand?
Wall Street, yeah.
Do you remember who took him public?
No.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, okay.
Almost put him out of business. I don't want Rivian to be working with the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, RJ, who started the company 10 years ago, is now, you know, overnight a billionaire. There's also
good for him. Smart kid.
There's also...
He's younger than you.
Yeah, but then there's... No, by far.
Yeah.
But there's also this thing where you get into such great inequities that it starts
to tear...
Oh,
we didn't even get to Rimats. We should have talked about Rimats.
It starts to tear society apart, right?
Yeah.
Where it's such a horrible inequity between, like, what most people earn and what a few individuals... But let's not go there. That's politics, and we don't want to do that. But
the communist versus capitalist discussion that an old Czech and an old Greek are going to have.
And actually, you can see that in Andre's Buhanka video.
Yes.
From a much more automotive standpoint.
And I think Nathan and I hit him really hard over the head with Russian jokes, so I apologize in advance for all the Russian jokes.
I think we should continue this conversation, but I'd love to do it with electric car companies.
We should.
I'd love to talk about Rivian. I'd love to talk about Tesla. I'd love to talk about some of the other car companies.
We should.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break, and then for next week, we'll go and fix some electric car companies.
And hopefully we won't invest in any.
No, I don't. Look,
Vanguard Mutual Funds. This is not a paid advertisement, but you should be investing in Vanguard Mutual Funds.
The one thing I've learned is if I give any advice, do the exact opposite. Remember that George Costanza episode?
Good,
that's me right
exactly.
there.
Exactly. So does that make me a lame?
No. I was like, when Tommy, you know, when Tesla first went public, Tommy was like, should I invest in this? I'm like, I don't think so. And he was like 13, right? So it was like, you know, this was like a long time ago.
Well, he was on top of it back then. That's
and
good.
If he had invested in it, you know, he'd be worth more than me right now. He would be.
So you'd be, actually, you already kind of report to him. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for joining us for this episode. And thank you, Motoman, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was super fun.
It was a lot of fun. And we'll get back together with you next week when we'll talk about how to fix some electric vehicle companies, even though they seem to not need our help. They're pretty much...
Well, rocking. They got all the money in the world.
They do have all the money in the world, but there's a lot of them out there. I'm not just talking about Tesla.
That's what we got to go public. That's what we got to do.
Go public.
We got to go to Wall Street and take all their money.
Do a SPAC. All right, guys. See you next time. Ciao.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.